The reading from 2 Kings chapter 5, verses 1 to 17. I'm sure you're familiar with this. Naaman, the commander of the Syrian army, was highly respected and esteemed by the king of Syria, because through Naaman, the Lord had given victory to the Syrian forces. He was a great soldier, but he suffered from a dreaded skin disease. In one of their raids against Israel, the Syrians had carried off a little Israelite girl who became a servant of Naaman's wife. One day she said to her mistress, "I wish that my master could go to the prophet who lives in Samaria. He would cure him of his disease." When Naaman heard of this, he went to the king and told him what the little girl had said. The king said, "Go to the king of Israel and take this letter to him." So Naaman set out, taking 30,000 pieces of silver, 6,000 pieces of gold, and 10 changes of fine clothes. The letter that he took read, "This letter will introduce my officer Naaman. I want you to cure him of his disease." When the king of Israel read the letter, he tore his clothes in dismay and exclaimed, "How can the king of Syria expect me to cure this man? Does he think that I am God with the power of life and death? It's plain that he's trying to start a quarrel with me." When the prophet Elisha heard what had happened, he sent word to the king, "Why are you so upset? Send the men to me, and I'll show him that there is a prophet in Israel." So Naaman went with his horses and chariot and stopped at the entrance of Elisha's house. Elisha sent a servant out to tell him to go and wash himself 7 times in the river Jordan, and he would be completely cured of his disease. But Naaman left in a rage, saying, "I thought that he would at least come out to me, pray to the Lord his God, wave his hand over the disease spot and cure me. Besides, aren't the rivers of Abana and Pharpar back in Damascus better than any of the rivers in Israel? I could have washed in them and been cured." His servants went up to him and said, "Sir, if the prophet had told you to do something difficult, you would have done it. Now why don't you wash yourself, as he said, and be cured?" So Naaman went down to the Jordan, dipped himself in it 7 times, as Elisha had instructed, and he was completely cured. His flesh became firm and healthy, like that of a child. He returned to Elisha with all his men and said, "Now I know that there is no God but the God of Israel. So please, sir, accept a gift from me." Elisha answered, "By the living God whom I serve, I swear that I will not accept a gift." Naaman insisted that he accept it, but he would not. So Naaman said, "If you won't accept my gift, then let me have 2 mule loads of earth to take home with me, because from now on, I will not offer sacrifices or burnt offerings to any god except the Lord." Amen.
Now, the story of Naaman is one that in many ways is very straightforward. There aren't any difficult doctrinal issues, any issues on interpreting the text. It's a quite straightforward story. The only item that is worth mentioning is the meaning of Naaman's name, which is actually gracious. Now, the Good News Bible helpfully translates Naaman's complaint as a dreaded skin disease. Other versions have perhaps unhelpfully referred to it as what we call leprosy. It couldn't have been leprosy as we know it today, because otherwise Naaman couldn't possibly have been the commander of the Syrian army. In any case, leprosy, or Hansen's disease, as it's technically known, was not definitely identified before the second century in Egypt. But whatever it was that Naaman had, it was clearly a debilitating disease, either physically or socially, or perhaps in both ways. And in view of what's later said in the text, we can assume that there was some kind of uneasy peace existing between the nations of Israel and Syria. But it's one that hasn't extended to the return of captives. But simple as this account may be, it refers to a number of different people. And I want to go through them and help us to learn what we can from each of those characters. Now, God, of course, has a great concern in all that is going on, and everything in a way happens surely at his instigation. It's his power that heals Naaman, not Elisha's power. And we'll follow the characters as they appear in the story. It begins, of course, with this little girl. Now, it's clear that there was this uneasy peace between Syria and Israel, and the girl must have been carried off in a previous raid into Israeli territory, and she was made a servant to Naaman's wife. Now, in those circumstances, you wouldn't particularly have expected her to be particularly concerned for this man. You might perhaps not have expected her to have much contact with him even, because it was Naaman's wife who she served. But Naaman was certainly highly regarded by his own people. Perhaps he lived up to his name and was a gracious man in his contacts with this little girl. Elisha's role as a prophet was, of course, widely recognized in Israel. But it doesn't appear to be entirely natural for this little girl to suppose that Elisha would heal a man from Syria. There's also a question of whether she would actually be believed. So I think we can assume that God is initiating this whole episode. But as he usually does, he uses human beings who are willing to do so. And so the first thing we learn is that God is always at work in our world, always working his purposes out, whether we can always recognize it at the time or not. And secondly, we see that even in the most unfavorable circumstances, we can be used by God if we have the courage to respond as he prompts us. If a small girl in a foreign country can serve God in this way, then surely each one of us can also serve God. And I don't know whether you've heard the term chaos theory. It's a mathematical theory that says that if a butterfly flaps its wings, say in China, it can somehow cause a storm, say in this country. And perhaps there is a sense in which spiritual things can work in the same way, in which a small event in one part of the spiritual world can cause a storm in another. The second person in our story is Naaman's wife. She has a small role, it's true, but it's still a necessary link in the chain. She, after all, just had to listen to this little girl. But there's perhaps no reason why she should think that what she says has any real meaning for her. And if Naaman's wife had not listened to this girl, the whole process would have been stopped dead. We need to remember that however small our part in God's purposes might be, it can nevertheless be absolutely essential. It's not the sort of thing that we should have a great deal of angst or fear about, because if God can't work things out in one way, he will work things out in another. But it might delay things. It might cause other people to suffer in some way whilst God finds another way to work his plans out. But it's the small things that can be quite important. A smile or a kind word over coffee may be just as necessary as an inspired sermon or uplifting worship or music. And then the next character in our story is Naaman himself. Naaman has to decide whether he will trust what this little girl has said. After all, she is a captive. She is not there voluntarily. He also has other considerations. He has to get his king's permission to go into Israel, of course. And that there was that difficult relationship with Israel. How would he himself be received? Would he be marching into danger? After all, he was a successful enemy commander as far as Israel was concerned. And as they say, accidents do happen. But it may well be that he is willing to take almost any chance to be healed. And then the king of Syria, yet another character with a very small part, but an essential one. He clearly thought very highly of Naaman, and he might have regarded any possible risk to his life as unacceptable. He could certainly have refused to let Naaman go, and then that chain would have been broken. But this consideration is put aside. Naaman is given a letter to the king of Israel. He also says, if you look back at the text, sends an exceptionally lavish gift. And I want to emphasize how lavish that is, because the amount of silver alone is 5 times what was paid for the whole site of Samaria, as recorded in 1 Kings chapter 16 and verse 24. And perhaps we should ask ourselves, would we be willing to put aside our own concerns and make material sacrifices for the sake of someone else? It's also interesting to note that the king of Syria sends this man not to Elisha, whom the girl specifically mentioned, but to the king of Israel. I guess kings stick together. And all of this was despite the fact that it was clearly Elisha that was not only mentioned, and who was probably known as well. Perhaps it shows that Elisha was thought to have been one of the king's entourage, though strictly speaking, he certainly wasn't. And that begs the question for us of whether we think that God always works through important people, those who have power or responsibility. If we think that, then we should clearly think again and look at the people that God so often chooses to work through within the Bible. After all, there are 2 women in the ancestry of Jesus, Ruth and Rahab. And the disciples themselves, were they remarkable people when they were called? I don't think they were, and yet they took the world by storm from the time of Pentecost. And then the next person who appears is obviously the king of Israel. He takes this letter from the king of Syria in the wrong way. He thinks that he's trying to pick a fight. And it's perhaps surprising that there's no mention of Elisha either, as far as we can tell from the text, in this letter. But it's a bit surprising that the king of Israel doesn't think of referring to Elisha. Surely he must have been aware of his existence and his reputation. And again, it leads emphasis to that assumption that in our own day and age, most of those in authority seem to discount God and God's servants from the general scheme of things. Alistair Campbell famously said, when referring to Tony Blair, we don't do God. We should remind ourselves, though, that God is concerned with everything that happens in our world. And I think it's fair to say that we have a responsibility to be aware of the issues around us as well, so that we can make appropriate responses, as Elisha did here, because Elisha heard of what was happening, heard of what happened at the king's court, and he basically intervened. Having heard of Naaman's arrival, he invites the king to send him on to him. And Elisha is not confident here in its own innate abilities. He's confident in God. He clearly has had a word, or he has deduced, that God is at work in this unusual situation with an enemy commander from Syria coming to the king of Israel. And then Naaman, having gone this far, responds to Elisha's invitation. And then he gets this very unexpected response. Elisha simply sends his servant out with a message and says, go and wash in the Jordan. Now, I don't think that either was Elisha's own idea. After all, Naaman was a man who was greatly respected, and was in effect the right-hand man of the king of Syria. And he surely must have felt that this man expected something other than a simple command to go and wash in the river. And as the text actually implies, the Jordan, by comparison, was not a very clean river either. But Elisha must have listened to God. This must have been God working out what he wanted to do in this situation. And we see that Elisha responded to the instructions that he had received in the way that he dealt with Naaman. God wanted to do more than just heal Naaman. So if we come back to Naaman for a moment, his reaction at first is understandable. He appears to have been treated with a great lack of respect and asked to do something extremely humiliating and perhaps embarrassing as well. And then we have the next characters in our story, his servants. And as they point out, Naaman has not been asked to do a difficult thing. It's not hard to go and wash in a river. And he's been promised a great reward. And I wonder if we sometimes react in the same way. Perhaps we'd rather have a difficult or dangerous thing to do rather than something simple, if that simple thing somehow injures our pride or causes humiliation. And quite often I think God challenges us in that way, and we have to ask how we're responding to what he might be asking of us. Now these servants clearly have a great respect for Naaman. They want to see him healed. But the response that they will get from Naaman must surely have been a little bit uncertain. He was a powerful man. He was angry at this situation. He might have turned round and reacted very badly. So they took a risk. But this is a risk that they took out of concern for him. Without their intervention, it does appear entirely possible that Naaman would simply have returned to Syria without being healed. These men too are part of God's care and provision for Naaman, another link in the chain. And it begs the question of whether we are prepared to risk rejection in order to help somebody else. So continuing the story, Naaman is persuaded by his servants, he dips himself in the Jordan, and he is healed. And as you might expect, with this healing comes a change of attitude. His reaction is to acknowledge God. He attempts to give Elisha a very lavish gift. The New Testament does, of course, indicate that the worker is worth his pay, but I think what Naaman would have been offering here was far too much for Elisha to accept. And all of this would have become public knowledge. So Elisha is keen not to accept reward for this, and is keen also to emphasize that it's not him, but God, who is responsible for this healing. And we should take care that whatever we do, if it's successful, we give credit to God for the things that he has done, the things that he has enabled to us to do. The gifts and abilities and resources that we enjoy, after all, are ultimately given to us by God. And at the conclusion of this story, we see Naaman making a commitment to worship God. In verses 17, that's why he's taking these 2 mule loads of earth back to Syria. It shows for us perhaps a weak or strange understanding of what is necessary to worship God, but nevertheless, it is a beginning. And we see in verses 18 and 19 that he's also concerned about what he might have to do when he gets back to Syria, about going into the temple. He wants to honour God. He does not want to do anything that will offend God. But Elisha is happy that God has done his work in Naaman's life for this time, and he says to him, "Go in peace." But we see not just a changed man in the sense that he's been healed, but a changed man in the sense of his relationship with the living God. God, of course, is behind all that happens in this story. We have seen that he uses the most unlikely people to bring about his purposes. A small girl carried off in a raid, the servants of a great man. And that kings play a really rather minor and fairly powerless part in this whole story. The one thing we haven't mentioned so far is that Naaman, of course, was not an Israelite, he was a foreigner. But this is one of many stories, really, which show how God wished to use Israel to bless those around them. Other examples are Ruth, who comes from Moab and dwells in Israel, and Nebuchadnezzar, who was greatly influenced by Daniel. And Nebuchadnezzar, like Naaman in a way, comes into a new understanding and acceptance of the living God. So in conclusion, we learn many things from this story. We see that God is a God of surprising grace. Naaman is not recorded as having done anything particular to deserve this healing. We also see that God is sovereign, but he does exercise his sovereignty by working through all sorts of people, from a little girl in a foreign land to the prophet Elisha. We see that he seeks to engage with us, as he did with Naaman. He wants to challenge our way of thinking. And this story does that. It challenges us as to whether we are willing to be part of God's sovereign purposes, whoever we are, wherever we are, as that little girl was. It challenges us as to whether we are prepared to be obedient, even when what is asked seems strange of us, such as Naaman being asked to wash in the Jordan. And finally, it challenges us to be willing to be links in a chain and be willing to give the glory to God and refuse the temptations that may come to us as Elisha did.